Shalom, this is Billy Brim coming to you today with the Voice of One Witness radio broadcast from Prayer Mountain in the Ozarks near Branson, Missouri. In 2006, someone handed me the manuscript of a book called They Told Me Their Stories, actually a pre-publication copy. I did not read that book much until 2007 in October, 1 year after it was written. And then I was just amazed by the book. It was just before our annual prayer conference. And Brother Tommy Welchel tells the stories in it of the Azusa Street saints that he knew very well, who were children at Azusa Street. And they explained what it was like to have the glory. Children, young, you know, not all children, some of them in their teens and 20. And I've been reading you the book. Now, Brother Tommy believes that this book, God told him to put it out at this time. It's in the book, and you can get the book from us. And that we're at the time when we must have a great manifestation of God and His glory in the church. And we can't just look to the past, though we can see what happened there and know that it can happen again. And let me finish the book now. I'm starting with Life Beyond Azusa, page 123, Meet Brother Brown, who was 16 at Azusa. I shall be telling this with a sigh someday ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. So wrote Robert Frost in his famous poem, The Road Not Taken. Throughout this book, we've shared the stories of Azusa saints ages and ages hence, some 60 years later. The Azusa Street Revival ended in 1910. For a host of possible reasons, the Shekinah glory left, never to return. The effects of Azusa on the lives of those who were there were as varied as the people themselves. At least two great denominations, the Assemblies of God and the Church of God in Christ, were born out of Azusa by leaders such as Ralph Riggs, C.W. Ward, and Charles Harrison Mason. We met two men, Brother Fox and Brother John G. Lake, who went on to serve the Lord in a powerful way as missionaries to India and South Africa. Two of these dear saints went on to establish missions for the downtrodden and needy. One man traveled throughout the Midwestern United States leading revivals and founding churches. There's no question that for many, life beyond Azusa was but a continuation of serving God. There were others who just allowed Azusa to be a footnote in their lives. Once the miracle ceased and life got back to the normal and ordinary, Azusa just lived in faded memories. Then there were others so impressed with Azusa that life just stopped there. Like Peter on the Mount of Transfiguration, who wanted to build three tabernacles and just stay there with Jesus forever. There were some saints who spent the remainder of their lives just reliving the memories and basking in the glory of days past when Azusa was alive and well. I met such a man. We'll call him Brother Brown. He arrived and retired at Pisgah just about 6 months before my arrival. When I met him, he stood several inches over 6 feet, had a medium build. He lived in the dormitory with me and constantly wanted to talk about Azusa. In fact, that's all he wanted to talk about. From time to time, we would go down to the dining hall and he would be in heaven as he got a chance to relive his days at Azusa. At Azusa, Brother Brown loved ministering to those who were blind. He shared with me that while there, he was involved in participating in the healing of over 50 blind people, and each and every time the healing was instantaneous. I asked Brother Brown if any particular healing stood out in his mind. He shared the story of a woman whose eyes were totally dark, almost black, with no white showing anywhere. The whites of her eyes had never developed, and she'd been blind from birth. The reason this miracle stood out in his memory is that when she opened her eyes after he prayed for her, she realized she could see. The lady let out a loud, blood-curdling scream that caused him to jump back in momentary fear. When her eyes opened and Brother Brown saw the whites of her eyes, he was just about ready to start shouting himself, but her scream was so sudden and unexpected it caught him by surprise. After the shock wore off, they both began to rejoice. All of his miracles were not with the blind. He participated in miracles for the crippled, deformed, and those confined to wheelchairs due to illness or physical disabilities. He recalled one time going to a man who was lying on a cot. Brother Brown asked him, "Do you want to be healed? Do you want to take up your cot and carry it home?" The man looked up and smiled. "Yes," his response was simple but clear. Brother Bill prayed for him, and immediately he got up, folded up his cot, then went around worshiping God. Before the man left the meeting, he went back to where he had been confined to the cot, picked it up, and carried his cot away while rejoicing that he had been healed. While Sister Carney and Brothers Ward, Riggs, and Anderson were running around seeking out people to minister to, Brother Brown was more subdued. Being more of a loner, he wandered around looking for blind people to whom he could minister. That was then. Even after the departure of the Shekinah Glory for the next several years, Brother Brown would return to the Azusa Street Church where Seymour still preached. He didn't go there with anticipation of seeing God move mightily. Rather, he went back there moping around, saddened by the loss of what had been. He would sit in the service and weep for the loss of yesterday. In 1960, there were no blind people being healed by Brother Brown. There was no legacy of being used by God as a minister or missionary. In fact, he had nothing but regrets. He told me that he had spent a lifetime remembering Azusa, but never moved on. He would wistfully tell me that he should have been preaching the gospel, or that he should have been a missionary like Brother Fox, but regretfully, he told me, he had missed God's purpose or will for his life. For over 50 years, he lived in the past, sitting around daydreaming about the yesteryears of Azusa. Wasted years. Now retired with his productive years behind him, he settled among the saints of Azusa where he could share his stories with those who would understand and welcome his addition to the Azusa legacy. But when he wasn't sharing his past, he was sad, if not miserable. Somehow, yesterday doesn't fulfill today's cravings to experience God in a fresh and vital way. Often, I would leave my meeting with Brother Brown with mixed emotions. I shared his joy of Azusa, but I felt helpless when faced with the sadness of this dear brother. How could one who had been used of God to heal so many who were blind have been so blind? And this is Brother Tommy's prayer. My prayer for all of us is, Dear Lord, don't let me miss you. Use me every day in a mighty way. Let me sense your presence and your fresh renewal each and every day of my life. I thank you for the memories of yesterday, but I need to experience you today and expect great things from you tomorrow. Yesterday is gone, but today and tomorrow I live in expectation of a new and wonderful outpouring of your mighty Spirit all around me. And then Brother Tommy talks on. Azusa has often been imitated, but never duplicated. In about 1910, William Seymour prophesied that God would visit his people in about 100 years. Now that the 100 years are upon us, there is anticipation that we should soon experience the Shekinah glory like the Azusa saints at the turn of the century. This will only happen if God's people follow God's formula. And then he mentions several things. He mentions prayer. They had great prayer for that outpouring. They had been praying for years there in Azusa. It had been even preceded by great revivals of prayer, the Welsh revival, and which came by prayer. And then he points out humility. Humility is God's style. In fact, he's going to give us H-O-P-E, humility, and hope, H-O-P-E, hope for the outpouring of God's presence. Humility, that's God's style. Obedience was obvious. Those involved in ushering in this manifestation of God's mighty presence sought his face and truly turned from their wicked ways. There was a holiness at Azusa where people lived in obedience to God's commandment to love one another and to love God with all their heart. Folks, that's so important that we walk in love. We have only one law, and it's the law of love. All the bickering, no matter what doctrine it's over, all the God says there is an abomination to him. 6 things, yea, 7 are an abomination, Proverbs tells us. The 7th thing being sowing discord among the brethren. I've just been sitting here talking with Randy Laughlin, our radio man, and I tell you, I don't want to be found sowing discord among the brethren. I remember Brother Hagin said, I don't care if they tell on me that I killed my grandma. I'm not going to let it get between me and God, and I'm going to walk with him. And he did. He was an amazing example before us who knew him. Brother Kenneth E. Hagin taught us about the glory of God and the manifestation of the glory and taught us to expect it and to look for it. And Brother Tommy Welchel, H, humility, O, obedience, P, and spoke of a holy life. Holiness is another subject. You know, that's being separated unto God and living a holy life. P, prayer is vital to God's visitation. Men and women had gathered months and years on their knees in fervent prayer, earnestly imploring God to send renewal and revival. Folks, we can pray. We must pray. We pray at Prayer Mountain. We must all pray that this will happen now. E, the H-O-P-E, is expectation. That's another word for faith, you know. Expectations were high. These men and women believed in their prayers. They were persistent and prayed in one accord, believing that God would hear the prayers of his saints, who in purity of heart and thought totally surrendered to his lordship. They prayed without ceasing and without doubt that soon they would experience the desires of their hearts. Now, you can read about those prayers and how Azusa started and how Brother Seymour went over to a house where women were praying and God provided the funds to start Azusa. All these things you can read about in the book, They Told Me Their Stories, which is to whet our appetites. I believe God's caused it to come out right now. And Brother Tommy Welchel and the publishers of this book, they feel that God showed to them that I would have something to do with this book getting out now. And so we have made a humble effort here. We're not on radio across the whole wide world. We're only on Oasis Network. But Oasis Network is one of the best places in the world to be on. We want to know that you're there. And we want to know that we want to know what you think about our radio ministry. And we're offering to you, we want you to contact us, and we're offering to you, They Told Me Their Stories, to whet your appetite. You can, if you just tuned in today, you can see what all marvelous things went before by calling us at 1-800-972-3447. You can order this book, They Told Me Their Stories, for $10. You can also order Tongues by Brother Hagen, Kenneth E. Hagen, who knew and so wonderfully puts forth the spiritual, scriptural foundation for this manifestation of the glory of God we're surely going to see. Also, we're going to be going into detail on these things at our eschatology school in Osage Beach, Missouri. That's going to be March 17th through 20th. It will be in a church that seats 500, Dr. Larry Ollison's church. Great church, Walk on the Water Faith Church. But we need to know you're coming so we can get ready for you. I'm looking to see you there. Just call us to register. Registration is free, and you don't have to register to come, but we can be more ready for you if you do. And the number is 1-800-972-3447. You can order the books or register at that number. And this is Billy Brim telling you how much I long for the glory of God. I long for the presence of God. And I know that in my own life, I have to make sure I'm walking in love. But I just am joining you. And all of us I know are hungry. So this is Billy Brim saying, Shalom, shalom, until next time.